This episode of The Luminaries on Deep in the Weeds is proudly supported by Deputy, rostering and timesheets without the usual chaos.
Hospitality is about generosity of spirit and, you know, and being generous. And if you're not generous in nature, then you're not good at hospitality.
This is The Luminaries on the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep.
A career in hospitality can be a fulfilling adventure, traversing the globe, influencing and enhancing people's lives and creating experiences they'll remember forever. But it's also a hard slog, countless hours and dedication, draining on the creative process and pressures to constantly evolve and stay relevant. But these things also bring out the best in people, and some not only create incredible careers, but leave an indelible mark on the culinary landscape too. Christine Manfield is one of Australia's most influential chefs and restaurateurs. Christine, how are you?
Good, thanks, Anthony. And you?
I'm great. It's good to have you on the show.
I know. It's a pleasure to be back chatting.
You've had an incredible impact on the culinary landscape, but you weren't going to be a chef originally. What flicked the switch to change from being a teacher to a career in hospitality?
Oh, look, I just think endless opportunities. It was just the road just led me that way, and it was just too enticing and too seductive to turn away from.
I want to explore moments in your career, but what was food like for you when you were young? What sort of role did it play in your family?
Look, it was very, without any disrespect to my family, I think I had a very typical upbringing, given the times, being a baby boomer. So it was very, it was just mainstream, meat and three veg sort of thing, and quite an austere sort of budget, being in a working class family. So it wasn't certainly... Food wasn't seen as with any sense of celebration. I think, it was a big hoo-ha for us to have a roast chook, which was a Christmas treat, and now that's just such an everyday, thing that no one thinks twice about.
Chris, you mentioned the normal sort of upbringing that you had with food, but you ventured into the world of teaching. Tell us about that moment when you decided and made the move into hospitality.
Well, I didn't really have a game plan when I actually quit teaching when I got my long service leave. And it was really through travel, So finished teaching because I wanted to, head back overseas. So it was really a love of travel and also just throwing myself into the deep end, into other cultures. And, the easiest way to access that is through food. And that's where the love affair really sort of started. And took that as an opportunity to sort of have a go at doing something in Australia and see where it led me. I just thought, I'll do this for a little while. And when I get bored with it or jack of it or it doesn't go anywhere, then that's time to step away from it. But it's still, 40 years later, it's still happening.
What were the challenges with that initial start into the industry for you without that sort of traditional training?
Well, it was very easy, It was back then, it was mid-80s. So, and Margie's my partner, her sister had just opened a guest house in Robe in South Australia, which is the crayfish port, which has huge swollen population during summer. And so, and she got a restaurant license. So she contacted us. We're still living in Paris, and thought, we'll come home and give this a go. She was a very keen cook as well, also a teacher. So both of us just muddled our way through. So I really just came in through the back door, if you like. And also at the time, there were people really making headway and really starting to define the food scene in Australia, and all came from different careers. Had Stephanie Alexander, you had Jan Ikritsis, you had Philip Searle, who I went to work with, you know, yada yada. There was a whole bunch of people, and none of them had any formal institutional, you know, TAFE training in cooking. So it was just through life experiences and a very deep love for food, and also making an impact and creating an imprint that was different to what we were used to, because it was very Eurocentric. You know, lots of fat men in tall white hats, you know, standing around pontificating, which, you know, that sort of, you know, classic European hotel system of training was the norm. And having come from the education, you know, education department and working in that system, I thought, nah, I walked away from that. I'm not going to step back into it. Because, you know, I just thought it was just full of deadwood, and there had to be fresh voice and a new way of doing things. And so, you know, that's I just happened to be, I think, really lucky or fortunate to be in the right place at the right time, to be caught up in that momentum, along with a whole bunch of others that I've mentioned and many more.
South Australia was really exciting in that time, and there were rebels like yourself that were carving a new path for the conversation in food for Australia. You worked with some people that went on to have huge influence like yourself. Do you have any stories from those days of the sort of teams that were together and the experiences you had?
Look, it was an incredibly collaborative time. I mean, you know, sort of being in Adelaide, living in Adelaide at that time, there was a sort of a group of, you know, nonconformists, if you want to call them, that used to meet at the Central Market every Friday morning and just talk about food and what could be done and stuff. So you had Chong Lu, you had Philip Searle, you had Michael Simons, Kath Carey, you know, a whole pile of people like that. And so it was, and that went on to create the Gastronomy Symposium, you know, Barbara Santich, et cetera, which was sort of an offshoot of the Oxford Gastronomy Symposium. So it was very sort of cerebral and intellectual, as well as being hands-on physical sort of work, you know. So I think that had a profound influence on me and the way I approached food, and sort of, you know, having the wanderlust and the travel bug, it sort of led me to places all over the world, and just thought, yeah, I can do something with this, and brought the sort of the two things of travel and food together, and let that inform the way I wanted to cook. And so I sought out people that I wanted to work with, collaborate with, and to cook with.
You've travelled all over the world, and also taken people all over the world to immerse into cultures and cuisines. Are there any trips that you can tell us about that really had an impact on the direction that you took as a cook?
Look, I go anywhere where there's spice. that's my starting point. And I think the first time I, you know, it'd be remiss of me not to say India, even though that's not the sum total of what I do. Going to India in the early 90s as a guest chef in residence at a hotel restaurant there, already sort of being familiar with the whole spice world and those ingredients, that really sort of opened new doorways of ways of thinking, and I just sort of got it, and, you know, letting that sort of seep into my work more, and as well sort of, you know, spending a lot of time in Asian countries, because I just am so in love with the flavors and the textures of how dishes come together in Thailand, you know, Malaysia, Cambodia, Vietnam, etc., China. And it was something very different. I think that it was also a big reaction, or, you know, showing that these types of foods, these flavors, could have equal standing with anything that Europe had to offer. At the same time, I loved going to Europe too, and sort of, you know, learning as much, you know, everywhere was for me was a learning curve.
the foundation of your career has been about collaborations and working with mentors, and now you've mentored so many of the young hospitality professionals. But who are really important to you as mentors as you developed your career?
Well, I would say Kath Carey, who back then at the time, she was one of Adelaide's better-known caterers, and then she stepped into the restaurant arena with the opening of Petaluma Restaurant up at Bridgewater Mill when Petaluma Wines bought that property and opened it as a showcase. And that's when I went and, you know, boldly walked in and asked for a job and got it. But she was very, you know, very Eurocentric and French unapologetically. So, and that was, it was great sort of training. But from there, and I also, you know, while I was there, Philip Searle had come back from New York, having closed Possums in Adelaide the year before, had a sabbatical in New York and came back to open Oasis Saros in Sydney. And, you know, we were already starting to think we need to live in a big city, you know, having travelled to, you know, every opportunity to big cities in the world. Adelaide just didn't quite cut it. It was like a country town. And I just wanted to throw myself into a much bigger pond. And so, you know, pursued Philip to come to, you know, so I could come to Sydney and work at Oasis. Which did happen about sort of 7 or 8 months after he opened it. I got there and had to wait a little bit. So in my sort of, you know, waiting time for 5 or 6 weeks, I think it was, I worked with went to work at the Wharf, which had just opened with Anders Ausback.
Wow.
Mm. So that taught me short order cooking and crazy mass numbers in a tiny little kitchen.
Paragon, Phoenix, Paramount, all incredible periods of time in our culinary landscape. What was it like and the challenges in opening those venues and creating your vision?
Well, the two pubs, which were Paramount and Phoenix, were owned by the same people. So we used to do lunch at Paragon, which is in the city, and then pack up and go and do dinner at the little jewel, like, it was very small, 24 seats, at the Phoenix in Wallara. It was a great starting point going into pub dining room. You know, if you know, they probably call them gastro pubs these days. But you were sort of constrained because it wasn't your business as such. You know, you had to make the money off the food because they took the booze money. That was the return for having the space. So you had to be. It taught us to be fairly business savvy straight off the bat, and it was a very, very a really good stepping stone. And I'm really glad we did that, and it gave us the courage and also the confidence to know that we always said a girl needs a room of her own. So we went on the hunt for a restaurant space, and that's when Paramount came about in 93.
Paramount, about 7 years, was an influential, one of Sydney's best diners. Tell us about that restaurant and how you found your voice on the plate there.
Well, I think I think like any business, you really have to stay true to your vision and also ask yourself constantly, what's my point of difference? What am I going to do? What am I offering that's going to allow me to stand apart in the pack? I think it's a much harder exercise these days than it was back then. Because there's just so many more players now. But back then it was still, you know, the whole modern Australian food scene was still, you know, still happening. It was still, you know, it was in embryonic stage back then. And once again, just really fortunate to be able to mix it with other hot young players at the time, you know, and all hang out together. So David Thompson and Neil Perry, Steve Manfredi, you know, Tony Bilson, et cetera. There's a whole bunch. And it was very much like a tribe, you know, and wanting to do things differently. There was that common sort of goal, and everyone bringing their own sort of, you know, personality to the table or onto the plate. And while we all sat under, you know, the modern Australian food thing umbrella is a very broad church, you know, it encompasses an awful lot, which makes it difficult to explain in one sentence, because it does come down often to the personality or, you know, what that particular chef is, how they're interpreting flavour, how they're using ingredients that are around them and expressing it in their own way.
This episode of The Luminaries on Deep in the Weeds is proudly supported by Deputy, helping managers and staff do their best work.
Building a business is hard. I feel it as I build my business. But I can tell you one thing, that every single day, I feel very blessed for the impact our business, Deputy, has in this hospitality community and the numerous stories that we have been part of. Stories where I've heard Deputy customers who have opened new restaurants because of the cost savings they've had by implementing Deputy in their business. Being able to open new restaurant, creating new employment, new opportunities, and new connections.
For more information, go to deputy.com.
With your experience with many venues, how do you strike that balance between viability, the vision that you have, and the creativity and success?
Well, I think, you know, it's really important to stay. The creative juices get, you know, just go off the Richter scale, really. When you've got business, which is great, you know, the busier you are, the more creative you get, I think. And constantly to just sit back for and reflect, you know, where you are, what am I doing, what could I do differently, without having any sort of knee-jerk reactions. It is that sort of staying true and staying the course and seeing the vision become reality and always, and Philip taught me this, how can I do something better? How can I make it more perfect? You know, that strive, that constant striving for excellence and establishing those benchmarks of excellence along the way and just, you know, really not being satisfied with anything that's less than what you perceive as being perfect, you know. And if it's not perfect, work on it more before you go public.
You spent a couple of years in London with East at West. How different was that hospitality industry compared to Australia? And what did you take from that time?
Well, it had a huge impact, of course. You know, going into it was, you know, throwing fat into the fire, sort of a much, much bigger playing field. It's just a bigger, uglier version of what Sydney was like. Just purely because of the massive size of that city. But it was at a really exciting time when the UK were just sort of starting to wake up to the fact that there was good food to be found outside of Europe. And so Asian restaurants with Asian influence were starting to take off. You know, you had David Thompson with Naam, who just opened, Hakkasan, Zuma, things like that. And there were just, you know, so it was off the back of that I was invited or headhunted over to head up this restaurant in Covent Garden, and we called it East at West because it was really about East, you know, bringing the flavours of the East, and it happened to be on West Street, so we just did a play on words. Plus you can take the true sort of meaning of, you know, East at West, you know, while it wasn't traditional Asian food in the sense it was, you know, done in a more fine dining sort of context with a Western looking at Asian flavours through a Western lens. So it was incredibly successful. We managed to make our mark in that time and get really good recognition for what we were doing. it was just cut short by the, I guess, the lack of support from the owners of the business who sought to just sell the property off. And so I bought that. I bought what I was doing, you know, because I knew the whole formula and what we were set out to achieve. It hadn't been fully realized there, so just bought it back, and that became the starting point for Universal, which opened, you know, in Sydney in 2007.
And Universal was an incredible addition to the culinary landscape. How different was that compared to what you had done before? And what did you love about that period of time in your career?
Look, I think doing business in the new millennium, in the noughties, was an entirely different experience to the 90s. The 90s were like, it was just incredible hedonism at the time, and it was totally freewheeling and wild in a way, you know. And then the whole nature of our industry sort of started to change around the time of the Olympics. It became a lot more corporatized. And so it was sort of like the big business had come to town and sort of in a way taken over. And I think the value of being in London for those couple of years really taught me about how to handle business a whole lot more effectively, and look at that. That was as important as the creativity in terms of the creative input that you give to the business. So I was able to, you know, basically look at the business and build the business both ways, you know, through a business perspective and through a creative perspective.
Mentors, you mentioned, influenced your career. What sort of advice do you have for those looking to start a business, given the uncertainty of the last 2 years, but the foundations of making a great hospitality business?
Look, it's just really tough. There's no two ways around it. I think just be really, really sure of what you're doing. Don't overstretch yourself. In the sense that, you know, ask yourself, I'm going into debt. And the only way you can sleep at night is to know that you can put yourself in a position that if the shit hits the fan and it all goes south, can I pay that debt off without killing myself? And if you can't do that, then you have to really ask the question, is it really worth it? I think the nature of businesses, you know, just the amount of businesses that are opening, and, you know, we have a finite, you know, number of people to you know, as customers to draw on. So you've got to really, and it comes back to that question of where do I see myself in the market, and what's my point of difference to everybody else? And it doesn't matter at what level you're coming in at. Whether it's a cafe or a bistro or, you know, or a fine dining restaurant or anything else, regional, you know, what is it that I've got that's going to attract people to come to me? So it's just sort of simple things like that. And to really, you know, listen to your own gut instinct. You can get advice from, you know, 10,000 people and you can get, you know, so many different opinions. So you've got to... It's wise to get counsel and to look at all the possibilities, but to also really trust your gut.
These days you're involved in all sorts of initiatives, from producers all the way to hospitality professionals as a mentor and with incredible advice. What's life like for you now? What's some of the projects that you've been doing?
Well, my current project is the release of my new book, Indian Cooking Class. So that's occupying a lot of my time, and will do so for the next sort of quite few months, because, you know, being up where I live, I just do local little pop ups and street eats, and you know, bookstall. I did a bookstall Friday at the Mullum Farmers Market. And a lot of the literary events or lunches and dinners that were planned for November all fell over because of the border closures, you know, so it restricted me from being able to take the book on the road and do the interstate thing. So we're picking that up in the new year around April, to give a longer run, and also for the opportunity for keen cooks and readers in all those different parts of Australia to be able to come and taste some food and chat about what I love about cooking with spice and all that sort of stuff. So and continuing to sort of have a few fingers in a few different pies, working with producers, particularly up here in the Tweed region. And we have different things that happen up here, like the Artisan Food Weekend, and I'm hosting little small group foodie trips. So I've got the Tweed region up on, it'll be up available in the new year. That's eight people that I take, and I've got Arnhem Land and Flinders Ranges again, which are already booked out. And it's also equally, it's about not just about the food, but it's about making that connection to country, on the country that you're on, and threading the importance of that history into the everyday narrative.
You've spent your career immersing yourself into cuisines and cultures and have a beautiful natural approach to cooking. How does cooking make you feel?
I just find it really easy and relaxing. I mean, it's something that I do every day. I don't ever shy away from it, although I really love it when someone else cooks for me, whether that's in a restaurant, and I like to go to different restaurants, one to support chefs and their businesses, and also to see, to see what's going on, see how they're interpreting their food flavors, etc. And also it gives you a measure of if you're in this game, you've got to stay relevant, so it is really important to know what your in a way, if you're a restaurateur, know what your competitors are doing. And for me, it's just the day I think that I have got nothing to offer, that's when I take a step sideways and remove myself from the public stage altogether. But that hasn't happened yet.
You were drawn by the connections forged in the industry and built a career based on those connections and collaborations. What is it about the hospitality sector that excites you so much?
Well, I think it is that, that shared love, and it's about hospitality. Hospitality is about generosity of spirit and being generous. And if you're not generous in nature, then you're not good at hospitality. And just the joy of work. I just think when you work in a team, because it's all about teamwork, it's just the next step of that is the collaboration thing, where everyone has sort of an equal voice. It's what you all bring to the collectively can bring to the table. And, often it changes your way of looking at something or doing something. It's refreshing to see someone, do something different. Oh, yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way, So I just think it's a constant learning curve. And that's the joy that I get out of it, because it's the education side of it as well as so that's thrilling, So it's feeding your brain and your mind, as well as nourishing you in so many other ways.
The last 2 years have been challenging for everyone on the planet, but the hospitality sector has had huge ramifications. What are the opportunities and what are you hoping for the industry in 2022?
Look, I just think it has been incredibly challenging. It's been horribly difficult for so many, and it's taught us to be, to dig deep and have even more resilience than we thought possible or imaginable. And I really applaud the younger ones who are, in some ways doing things on a shoestring, doing this. I'm all about supporting the small independent operators, you know, whose total life is in the balance. You know, they've really put themselves out on a limb to pursue their dreams in the business, and rather than, you know, giving money over to the big corporates.
Well, Chris, it's an absolute honour to have you on the Luminaries today on Deep in the Weeds, and an absolute pleasure to catch up with you again, as always. Please keep in touch, and we'll catch up again soon.
Okay, cheers. Thanks, Anthony.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we take a deep dive into the lives of the incredible people who ply their trade in the food and hospitality sector.
Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen. Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast, or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au. Stay safe and be well.